1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I wrote War Day in 1982. It took about 8 months to write the first draft. Looks like I'm... Are we done? Good.
That's very good. You must have done this before.
Oh, yeah, a few times.
Roslyn Perot is one of my colleagues. Talked to author Jim Canetta.
Jim Canetta, yeah.
I think she did it. She did it with a telephone, however. She does a report on the future. I'll count down to tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember him mentioning something about that. He was a phoner when he was down in Austin.
Let's say a couple more words from there.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Do you live in the apartment building that you describe in Warden?
I certainly do. I live in the apartment building, and it's exactly... I'm married to that lady, and I have that son.
Level looks a little low.
All right.
Go ahead, just say a couple more words.
Okay, I'll just keep talking about it and see how we do. I felt that it was important to the book's documentary style to put my own name and my own family in it, and Jim Canetka also, exactly as we really are in real life.
Yeah, you are right. That's good.
Good.
Well, I enjoyed the book. It wasn't exactly like the one I had read just before War Day, which was called Knopp's Trials, which was about a sheepdog.
I read Knopp's Trials. Someone sent me a galley of it about 6 months ago. It was a very relaxing book, entertaining.
It was.
Yeah.
War Day was also entertaining in a variety of ways because growing up on science fiction as I did when I was a teenager back in the 1950s, there were a lot of disaster novels being read in those days. But yours, I think, transcends a typical disaster novel. The science seems to be very accurate. Now, of course, I don't know that for a fact, but it sounds right based on what I've been reading. So tell me a little bit about how how your idea for War Day evolved.
All right. We started out confronting a situation, which was that nuclear weapons are getting smaller and more usable and being placed closer and closer to the front lines by both the U.S. and the USSR. And my collaborator, Jim Canetka, and I have been friends for 25 years, and we've had kind of an ongoing dialogue about this. He's a science writer. His dad was on the Manhattan Project and at Los Alamos. And in the past 2 or 3 years, this took on a tremendous sense of urgency. He had a conversation with Edward Teller, in which it became clear that Teller was very comfortable with the idea of a limited nuclear war. Then we saw the Presidential Directive 59 come out during the Carter administration, stating the United States would be prepared to fight such a war. Then we saw the Federal Emergency Management Administration beefed up, FEMA, which is the group that is designed to help the United States recover from nuclear attack or from any kind of a major disaster like that. And we got frightened. And what we felt we should do was to define the term that is used by people who talk about these things to describe what it will be like after a limited nuclear war, if such a thing is possible. That term is survivable. War Day is about the business of surviving a limited nuclear war, exactly what that would mean.
You deliberately set out to... As Western Union does, send a message. You did not want to write just a story, did you?
No. I don't think that at this particular time in history, just a story about this subject would be appropriate. Of course, there's a message.
Did you have some trepidation when you heard that the ABC TV network was coming out with the day after, which might have, but didn't, obviously, steal some thunder from you?
No, The Day After and War Day are about two entirely different things. The Day After is about a nuclear exchange and what happens literally the day after. War Day is about an journey around America, which is an imaginary journey, and it remains the most extraordinary journey my collaborator Jim Konecka and I have ever taken, 5 years after a nuclear war takes place. And we cross the country interviewing people and talking to them about how they are trying to put a lost world back together again.
The world, or at least the United States, is graphically presented in War Day. You do not state, except perhaps, I think you gave us one line toward the very end, what happened to the Soviet Union. That was something you did not want to address, I would say.
Well, it's not that we didn't want to address it. We would like to have addressed it. However, we were very rigorous in the rules under which we wrote this book. As far as this book is concerned, the year we wrote this was 1993, and it was after this war. Now, among the things that happened during the war is the communications facilities of all kinds in the United States are devastated by the so-called electromagnetic pulse that comes from atomic bombs detonated in outer space. So we would not necessarily even then know exactly what happened was happening in the USSR. We do, however, feel it's very important, and War Day was originally, this was one book, it was called simply War Day and the World. It is, however, now War Day, the American experience, and War Day, the Russian experience. And the Russian experience we will finish as soon as the political situation settles down in Russia enough to project into the future. And
you are doing a sequel.
It's a sequel, yeah. Uh-huh. Or a companion volume would be more appropriate, I think, to call it.
How did you and James Konecka divide the writing duties? It's many of the chapter headings, of course, make it very clear who
yes.
is writing what. Well, and your writing style is substantially different from his. So I think you could pick the reader could pick out who was writing what in most
yes,
instances.
I would think so. Yeah, Jim Konecka is a science writer and has a science background. He has written Oppenheimer, The Years of Risk, and another book, City of Fire, about the inception of the atomic bomb at Los Alamos. And he wrote most of the scientific material in the book, the documents and the bureaucratic memoranda and so forth and so on. I wrote the interviews and the narrative of the book.
Where did you, does he live in New York as well?
No, Jim lives in Austin, Texas.
Did you have any difficulty in this collaboration, being so far apart?
No, not at all. We just use the mail. It's very trustworthy in the end. It may take a little time, but it gets there. At least that was our experience.
You'd written The Hunger and The Wolfen earlier. Did
yes.
you have any difficulty in working with a collaborator this time around?
Well, I've known Jim since we were children. We met in 1956. And I cannot imagine us having any difficulty collaborating. If there was ever anger, it was accompanied by a lot of humor. And if there were ever arguments, we've had so many arguments in our long friendship. I know every way there is to know to solve a controversy with Jim, and vice versa is also true.
Did you grow up in Texas as well?
Yes, I did.
San Antonio?
We grew up in San Antonio together. We went to grade school together and high school together, and we were roommates in college at the University of Texas.
How did it happen that you turned out to be a writer? What in your earliest beginnings led you on this path?
I wrote my first short story when I was 6, and it was about a page long, and it was about the moon coming up. And I do not frankly remember a time I did not want to be a writer. It's just been in my blood.
What did you study at the University of Texas?
English literature.
What happened to you when you got out of school? You obviously, a new grad is not going to, unless there's something phenomenal, is not going to make it with a hit novel.
No, I spent many years. I spent a year in London, and I came back and got down to the serious business of working. I wrote the Great American Novel and sent it out to a few publishers and waited for the success to roll in. About 6 weeks later, I took a job in an advertising agency. I worked in advertising for about 7 or 8 years and wrote on the side. And gradually, I changed and became very committed to certain issues. And my first book, The Wolfen, was about the Timberwolf and There was a lot in it about the Timberwolf. However, it turned out to be more of a horror novel because I was trying to write an interesting story about something that would grip people. So a lot of people would read it, and they would incidentally get the material I had in it about timberwolves as a sugar-coated pill, as it were. And I became a novelist that way and got identified as a horror novelist pretty much by accident, but it wasn't an identification I objected to at all.
What was your appraisal of the motion picture version of The Wolfen?
A good try. They had some very bad luck. They lost special effects in a fire right before the film was due to be released and had to reshoot an enormous amount of material. And if they hadn't had to do that, the film would have been gripping. As it was, it got pretty good reviews.
It was a beautiful film.
Yes,
it was. Color and imaginative photography.
There was some heroic work behind the scenes in that film, believe me, in the last 6 weeks with people running around with Aeroflex cameras in the streets of New York trying to replace the irreplaceable, and they did it.
Did you have any role in that film?
Moral support. I was around a lot. I wrote the first draft of the script. It was a good experience for me.
The horror genre, are you going to make that your own?
No, I don't think so. I kind of backed into it. I was more interested in my material about timberwolves than I was in the Wolfen themselves when I wrote the Wolfen. Although subsequently I've been told by people who've read the book that they hardly remember the timberwolf material. Then I wrote The Hunger, and because I did get interested in horror novels, but I think after I finished with the two War Day books that I'm going to probably concentrate, I'm probably write a book about Texas, or where I'm from, and there are also some other books, concerns that I have that I would like to write about, not nuclear war, but involving the environment and such things.
You have that great American novel in the drawer still. Might be better than you think.
Well,
than the
I don't know.
Publisher's thought.
I haven't opened that drawer in some years, and I think maybe I'll leave it closed a while longer.
What happened to the advertising agency job?
I left that during the course of The Wolfen. The demands of The Wolfen, this film and so forth, became great, and it was obvious that I should spend my full time doing that.
Where do you work? In your home?
Yeah, my office.
How do you have,
in my home.
What's that?
Offices in my home, yes.
How do you have your workplace carved out for you? Do you have any, for I live in Manhattan as well, but with in the traditional L-shaped Manhattan apartment with very little privacy.
Well, I have a couple of bedrooms. I live down in the village in a converted factory building. And so we've got it set up so that I am sitting in a room, a little room, with a desk and right now hundreds of books about nuclear war and the scientific aspects of it and the economic aspects of it and all of the various things that went into the making of War Day.
The companion piece, though, will be set in Russia, did you say?
Yes, it will be set in Russia.
How's the research going for that? Have you been to Russia at all?
Oh, yes, I have been to Russia. I haven't been in the past few years. I intend to go again this fall. It's going very well. We have a great deal of research being done at the moment.
Is this going to be an odyssey across Russia?
Yes, it'll be the same type of odyssey. The purpose of the second book, of course, will be to humanize the Russian people. Because the philosophy of War Day is very much different from everything that's come before. There's not a sense of hopelessness in this book at all. It's a book of hope, and it's a book of hope because it's about the strength of ordinary people, frankly. And I think that by going back to that, we can find our way to peace much more surely than we can at the moment at the conference table.
Who are some of the writers you are looking to these days?
Some of the writers
that you like.
Whom I like. Well, I'll tell you, I've been reading the books of an English writer who's deceased, Olivia Manning. Probably nobody's ever heard of her. She's a wonderful writer. She wrote a group of books called the Balkan Trilogy and another group called the Levant Trilogy, set before and during the Second World War, and they're just very, very beautiful, well-written novels, very solid, deeply characterized books.
Any political aspect to her work?
The misfortune of the folly of war is at the core of her work.
I was looking for a relationship between her work and War Day.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I haven't been reading much of anything except material relating to War Day. I've been reading things like The Threat by Alexander Coburn. I've been reading The Arsenal, Costa Sipis' new book. Costa Sipis is one of the scientists who played an enormous role in making sure that War Day was an accurate novel, scientifically. I have been reading, I of course read Jonathan Schell's book, The Fate of the Earth. Freeman Dyson's new book of Weapons and Hope has been one that I found very good and inspiring.
I know this sounds like somewhat a just disjointed interview, but you mentioned the companion piece, which takes place in the Soviet Union and the Odyssey around there. With the Soviet Union such a closed nation, are you having difficulty in finding out what the nation looks like outside of
No.
the largest cities?
Not at all. The Soviet Union is a closed nation, but it's also a nation which has expelled an enormous number of immigrants into the world, a lot of them to New York City. So one of the best places on earth to find out about the Soviet Union is not Russia or Moscow, it's New York. And I'm right here, and I have the help of many dozens of people who grew up and lived for years and most of their lives in the Soviet Union, in all parts of the country.
So you're seeing the nation through their eyes.
Through their eyes, that's correct.
How does a young man from San Antonio like working in New York City?
When I was a little boy, I used to lie on the roof and watch the planes take off and turn north towards New York. I eventually followed them, and I think that is the answer to that question.
Whitney, thank you very much. Am I pronouncing your name? Strieber, right?
Whitley Strieber, yes.
Not Strieber.
Right.
I imagine you get it both ways sometimes.
Right.
It was nice talking to you. Thank you for coming in and chatting with me. It was certainly an impressive piece of work.
Thanks very much.
I was in San Antonio 2 years ago. I grew up in Houston.
You
did?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah,
where?
So.
What part of Houston?
Well.
Or a lot of parts, maybe.
Well, my father, in 1946, built a house. Couldn't build it prior to that because there was a shortage of materials because of the war.
Yeah.
So he built a house on a street called Dorrington.
Mm-hmm.
At Dorrington, you wouldn't know it, but Dorrington is, the house was exactly two blocks west of what is now the Shamrock Hilton Hotel.
Yeah, I know where that is, sure.
Yeah. Shamrock Hilton was then, of course, when I lived there, it did not exist. It was simply I guess it was a vacant lot.
There were a lot of Houston was vacant lots in 46, 47.
There was nothing across the street from our house. There were, matter of fact, there was just flat land, except that some construction people had carved out areas for development, but had never put houses up. And it stretched all the way to, well, we could see trees maybe a mile distant, and that was the Braeswood Bayou,
mm-hmm.
it was called. And it was very shallow. Creek. They have moved it subsequently. I think they have it in a concrete, what do they call it, a culvert?
Culvert, no, it's covered over. Yeah.
Yeah. You see it occasionally. It's quite deep. I noticed in going back to visit my parents who still live there that these culverts where these bayous run may be 50 feet deep, but because the water doesn't drain off rapidly in Houston, during a flash rainstorm, the water will actually rise up and fill it.
Fill it, yeah.
It will actually fill it. But you look at it, you see a trickle of water going there, mm-hmm. and you can't believe the torrent that will run through there because of the lack of runoff.
Yeah.
And indeed, in low parts, I was there one summer, and there were a couple of rainstorms, and a woman got caught in her car and drowned in a low spot. And I kept trying to picture low spots in Houston.
There were, though.
But I couldn't think of it. I just couldn't imagine it.
You know, there's a whole neighborhood south and east of Houston, of the city itself, down on the far side of the ship channel, which has sunken. It's underwater.
My father...
forgotten what it's called.
My father has a very nice house in the western portion of Briar Grove, Briar Ridge. And one wing of the house he's had to have pumped up twice because it had sunk, and you could tell it would sink because the doors would not open.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do, apparently they pump concrete underneath the house.
Mm-hmm.
The garage also sank, but he, instead of having that pumped up, it's very expensive, When it fills with water, he has an electric pump, and he just pumps it out.
Mm-hmm.
When I grew up there, we didn't have air conditioning. Our house had a screened-in porch. It was a two-story house, much like a Yankee house. All the houses in our neighborhood were built like a house in the north. House, I understand now, our old house, Dorrington Road, is now a beauty parlor, I understand. But I never had any trouble with the heat, and we would run around barefooted, and the windows would always be open. But now when I go back to visit my family, it's always in the summer, and I have a very difficult time adjusting to it.
Me too. I was the same way. The windows were always... We didn't have air conditioning until the late 50s, and I was just... I never thought about the heat.
Well, I think you have a... you go from very cold into all of a sudden heat, and then you into a car that's becomes air conditioned very rapidly.
A couple of years ago, we went down to Texas during that drought, that heat wave in 79, I guess it was. And I think it was 79. Maybe it was 80. I think maybe it was 80, summer of 80. And it was going up to like 105 in San Antonio every day. And all three of us got sick, my wife, my son, and I. We had to come home. We just couldn't take it.
My father told me that he knew it was hot, but he couldn't really tell the difference. If it's not in Houston, where it's so hot and humid anyway, and it's 100 degrees and it goes up to 105, they're not going to be able to tell that. That year, I had gone to New Orleans first. My family, I have a son, and we stopped in New Orleans. New Orleans was even worse than Houston. We just
New
died.
New Orleans can really get oppressive.
It was not only that, it was dirty and depressing.
Yeah,
I was glad to get into Houston. That was the year we drove into San Antonio for my first trip. And we found it a lovely town, surprisingly nice, with the river walk. Small city, but very pleasant, very nice, and we enjoyed the trip thoroughly.
San Antonio and Austin are both like that. They're sort of twins, and they're both very, very pleasant cities.
Do you go back often?
Every summer. Same as you do, probably.
Yeah. Well, I'm going. My mother and father are pretty old now. They're in their 70s. My mother is, for a woman with emphysema and practically living on an oxygen tank, she has to live in one of the worst climates.
That's too bad. They can't move?
Well, I suppose they could, but where are they going to go? I mean, all of what friends they have who are still alive are there. And, my brother is there, and his family, and my... my cousins, Tom Swaim and Dick Swaim, are there, and all of their family are either there or in San Antonio.
My
uncle and aunts there, or in Dallas or Tulsa.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. What have you got in there?
That's
a copy of the Hunter.
And I would appreciate it very much if you would sign these for me.
Okay, great. I'd love to. What I did with my pen. Could I borrow yours?
Yes, certainly.
You okay there?
If it works.
Well, I think mine's in my suit. I've got it. I just put a new refill in it. I've been doing this an awful lot lately. Thank God.
What's that?
I said, thank heavens, I've been doing this a lot lately. It's Don, S-W-A-I-N?
M, as in Mary.
Right. I knew it. I knew I was going
to. And for somebody like myself, who grew up in Texas, I went to school in Ohio.